How to work out what strategy you need and in what location. Strategy and location. Common questions asked are, what location should I be targeting and what should my strategy be? While these are simple questions, the answers are not so straightforward, as it is different for each individual person. The reason for this is because the location you select and the strategies you target need to fit your personal characteristics. It needs to fit the money you have available, the time you can commit, the distance you are prepared to travel, your risk profile, and the list goes on. The intention of this module is to teach you how to review your own personal characteristics and then understand how these fit in with the different locations and different strategies on offer. By the end of this topic, you should have a clear process for selecting your own locations and strategies based on your own personal characteristics. Your personal circumstances. Your personal circumstances need to be the underlying driver of what location you target and what type of deal you focus on. These personal characteristics include your goal, income or growth, your time frame, your available equity, your borrowing capacity, and your serviceability, and hence your purchasing price point, your time availability, and how far you are prepared to travel. Other characteristics are your strategy to sell or hold the property, your previous experience in property, and your risk profile, as these all have significant impacts on your chosen location and strategy. So let's look at each of these individually. What is your goal, income or growth? Depending on whether your goal is for income generation or growth, this will dictate the strategy you begin with and also the location you focus on. For example, a purely income-driven strategy is more likely to be targeted in a regional area, possibly mining, although there are always exceptions and we will look at the strategies in more detail in a later section. Knowing your goal from the outset is essential, as the process that you go through and the end product that you produce may be different if your intention is to hold and rent versus sell. Changing your goal midway through the process should be avoided wherever possible, as it brings a level of uncertainty into the process and can result in time delays and have cost implications. If you are time poor, you need to focus on strategies that are not time intensive. So for you, what are you after? Are you really chasing income or growth deals? Your characteristics. What is your time frame? The period of time that you have allocated yourself to achieve your goals will clearly impact on the strategy you choose and also the location. Being realistic with your time frames, though, is also critical. You are definitely setting yourself up for difficulties if you expect to find, build, and sell a multi-unit development in 6 months. Equally, giving yourself too much time to do a simple deal may mean you are being inefficient or just wasting valuable time. What is your time frame for completing the next deal? And over the next year, how many deals are on your agenda? What is your available equity, borrowing capacity, and serviceability? Your available equity clearly impacts on the amount of funds you can contribute to the deal, including the deposit you can pay, the funds you have available to do the strategy, and your capacity to hold the deal. Your borrowing capacity and serviceability equally impact on how much you can leverage your equity. Clearly, these three parameters impact the property price point that you can buy in at and the strategy you select, as some strategies are more cash intensive than others. This also brings up the next question of whether you are able to organise joint venture arrangements where your personal income, serviceability and funds available for investment become less important, and it is the financial position of your joint venture partner that is important. This is where your strategist really earns his or her money. He or she will give you guidelines on what your capacity really is when it comes to equity and serviceability. In the spaces in your manual, capture what your parameters are from what the strategist has said in your wealth check. How much can you borrow? What strategy are you considering for your first deal? How much money will you need for that strategy? What is your maximum purchase price? If you don't have clarity on any of these questions, then refer back to your strategist to assist you. What is your time availability? The amount of time that you can contribute to your investing goals will significantly impact on the location you choose and the strategy. If you are time poor and have limited time to contribute to property, you need to be looking closer to home in areas that you can get to relatively quickly. Your strategy needs to be less hands-on from your perspective, and you need to look at leveraging your time by employing others. That may be tradies to do the renovation for you, or consultants to get the approvals through, or it may be strata titling where it is more of a paper shuffle. Conversely, if you have more time available, you may consider deals a further distance away and strategies that require more of your personal input. It is important to be clear on this aspect, because once you are in a deal, your input of time will always be more than what you anticipated, certainly for your first few deals, or at least until you have a well-practiced system and team in place. So don't overextend yourself and then find that you are not able to commit the time that the deal requires. What areas of your life now are you willing to reallocate time from that can now be used to work on this business? How much time can you realistically allocate to your success in this business? Write down on a timesheet what time you can commit to working on your real estate business day by day. How far are you prepared to travel? Many personal circumstances will affect your decision on how far you are prepared to travel. Do you have young children? Are you a sole parent with limited support around you? Do you have a demanding job that requires you to be in close proximity? Clearly, all of these situations will have an impact on how far afield you can go with your deal. Considering this and being realistic is essential. So how far are you prepared to travel to do a deal? And how far do you believe you need to travel? Is your strategy to sell or hold? The answer to this question has important implications. This is because if the answer is to sell part or all of the end product, you want certain parameters to be present. A reasonable population size in the area is essential for selling. Clearly, if your town only has 2,000 residents, the demand for property and the turnover of property will be lower, and your time frame to sell is likely to be slower. Similarly, where the market has a lower volume of sales, selling your product in that market will be harder. The average days on the market wants to be lower, not higher. For example, a more regional area where it takes an average of 200 days to sell is less favourable than an area where the average days on the market is only 20 days. Equally, if you are relying on renting the end product, you want an area with a lower vacancy rate, with good job prospects to attract people to the area, or alternatively, lower priced rents that are affordable to lower income earning residents. If your property is affordable to someone who lives on Social Security payment, your property is pretty much recession proof. Is your first strategy a hold or sell deal? What type of area suits this strategy at your price point? What is your level of experience? If you have never owned a property before and you have never done a deal, your skill set and experience is going to be very different from someone who comes into property with several deals under their belt, or a background in construction, or as a real estate agent. While it is great to be optimistic and have vision, it is also important to be realistic and manage your risk. For example, starting with no experience and then beginning with a townhouse construction development in another state may not be the best project to cut your teeth on. That's not to say you won't aim to build up to that level very quickly, but certainly to start off your first couple of deals, perhaps this should be taken into account, because the banks certainly will, particularly for large projects with a greater loan amount. There are enormous learnings to be had in your first deals, and so learning these with a smaller amount of money on the line is just good business. Remember, little deals might only make little profits. However, they tend to only make little losses too, if things go wrong. Similarly, bigger deals might have the allure of bigger profits, but they can also make bigger losses. Let's just take a reality check here. Is the strategy you have selected in line with your level of competency? Whilst the idea is not to crush your enthusiasm, you do need to be realistic. Some strategies are okay to try even if you have no experience at all, for example, a small subdivision splitter. As it is not your skill level that the strategy depends on, it is the skill level of the professionals that you employ. Provided you can follow a checklist, you can normally stumble your way through it. Granted, the first one you will do will probably take you longer than the 10th one you do, but it's an easy starter. Does your selected strategy align with your skill level? What is your risk profile? Everyone coming into property comes with their own risk profile, which is influenced by your age, your job security, your net worth, your available net equity, your experience, and your history. Being aware of this and where you sit on the risk spectrum needs to be taken into account when selecting your location and strategy. Clearly, the younger you are and the more time you have to accumulate wealth, the higher your risk profile may be. Conversely, someone closer to retirement, that is starting from a lower equity base, will be much more risk averse, and their selected strategy and location needs to reflect that. Would you consider you have a low, medium, or high risk tolerance? Does your strategy fall into this risk tolerance? See the attached appendix in this section and check your chosen strategy against both the risk tolerance strategy indicator and the price point strategy indicator. How did you fare? Does your strategy fit the indicator checklists? Location. When considering location, you first need to consider the difference between areas. The three key areas I am referring to are mining and resource areas, regional areas, and metro areas. The characteristics of these areas will either fit or not fit your personal characteristics, so let's review each individually. Then we will review the different characteristics that define a location and that need to be considered in your decision-making process. Mining and resource areas. Mining and resource areas are generally volatile, owing to the very nature of the industry that is driving them. Commodity prices fluctuate, infrastructure spending varies over time, and so too does the workforce. Consequently, there can be great variability over time on the demand for properties, rental rates, property values, the eagerness or otherwise of the banks to lend in these areas, the demand for investors to buy, and the amount of development occurring. Changes in these conditions can also occur quite quickly, hence they can have a significant impact on the success of the strategy you propose to employ. Essential to your decision-making process, therefore, needs to be an understanding of these conditions and the industries operating in the area. This level of volatility clearly increases the risk profile of doing deals in mining and resource areas, and this needs to be at the forefront of your decision-making process. Yes, mining and resource areas come with potentially higher income earning capacity, but also have the potential to change quickly. Therefore, limiting your exposure in these areas is good business. Regional areas. Regional areas, in contrast to mining and resource areas, tend to be more consistent. They tend to be founded in well-established, long-standing industries like agriculture and manufacturing. Property values tend to remain more stable, but at a lower price point. Rental rates tend to be moderate, but with lower buy-in prices. This results in typically higher yields. Capital growth is generally slow and investor demand moderate. Certainly, population growth and jobs in the region have a big impact on these parameters, and a decline in population and jobs will adversely affect the property market on all fronts. Regional areas can often be great places to start if you don't have a lot of money or haven't ventured into the property market before, as regional areas tend to be fairly forgiving when it comes to making mistakes. The entry point is lower and the rents are higher proportionately, so even with a few stuff-ups along the way, you can normally still rent the property and it is neutral to positive cash flow. However, this won't necessarily rock your world either, but are a great place to learn and practice. Metropolitan areas. Metro areas are characterized by significantly larger populations, greater job diversity and economic diversity. Plus, property price movement tends to be more cyclical and driven by broader economic parameters. Property prices are generally higher, as is the potential for capital growth, but rental yields are lower. Banks are more comfortable with security in metro areas, hence the lending tends to be easier. There are more owner-occupiers and investor buyers, therefore selling in metro areas can be easier. However, you normally need more equity to be able to enter a metro market than you would to enter a regional market. Think about your own risk tolerance, entry price point, personality and preferences, and write down what your preferred target market is. Population size. The larger the population of an area, the greater the volume of buyers, sellers, and renters, the more jobs that are available, and typically the more stable the economy. This provides a level of flexibility in exit strategies, whether that is selling or revaluing and renting. Banks are also more comfortable lending on property where the population size is larger. Hence, a deal will be potentially easier to finance and at a higher LVR, loan-to-value ratio, in areas with higher population size. As a general guide, banks like a population of 10,000 or more for regional areas. This doesn't mean that they won't lend for purchases in smaller populations. It just means you will probably need a bit more deposit, 20%, and have a reasonably strong income. However, because the cost price is lower, having at least a 20% deposit is easier. What size population areas are you targeting? and why? Infrastructure spending. Jobs typically come with infrastructure spending, as do improved services and the potential for property price growth and rental growth in the area. You do not always get all of these factors at the same time, but certainly the flow of money into an area is usually a beneficial indicator from a property perspective. Whether the infrastructure is a new road that gives better access to the town centre or a new hospital, clearly this has the potential for positive impacts. Understanding the duration of the infrastructure project, the spending and job profile, and at what stage the project is, are essential factors that need to be taken into account. For some projects, you want to be there at the very beginning, but out by the end. For example, to capitalise on the spike in jobs and hence need for accommodation, and then for other projects, you want to be there indefinitely. As an exercise, write a list of desirable infrastructure projects that would create jobs growth in the target area, and note whether the projects would have a short, medium, or long-term effect on jobs. Now, on consideration, what infrastructure project will you research for your next purchase? How would you find out about where such projects are being undertaken in your target state? If you are having trouble with this question, ask your coach for guidance. Supply and demand. Whether your goal is to hold and rent the property or to sell, the underlying supply and demand profile of the market is an essential characteristic that needs to be taken into account. If your strategy relies on selling, you want to focus on a location where demand is high and supply is low, so that your property sells quickly. These characteristics are not static, though, and so understanding the trends and what is driving them is critical. For example, if there has been a spike in recent council approvals, this would suggest a potential increase in developments coming out of the ground in the area, and hence an increase in the supply of property that you may be competing against. Conversely, if demand is low and there are few buyers in the market for your product, it is likely to take longer to sell or rent. How many development applications have been lodged in your target area in the last 12 months? Are you having trouble finding the answer to the previous question? Why not ring the Council of Interest and ask where this information can be gained and where it can be found on your website? In some more archaic councils, it may not yet be available. You should also go back to the Ultimate Notes and review the tech tools sections and websites such as planningalerts.org.au and home.id.com.au and apps such as Layer, which are really useful. The tech tools section of the Ultimate Bootcamp covers all this. Rental vacancy rate. The underlying rental vacancy rate in a location impacts not only on your likelihood of obtaining a tenant, but also impacts on market value trends. This is because as the rental vacancy rate reduces and there are less available properties to rent, the rental rates tend to increase and at some point reach a level where it is as economical for someone to pay a mortgage as it is to pay rent. At this point, people move out of the rental market and into the home ownership market, which in turn increases the demand for property and can increase price growth. The other aspect is that as the rental rates increase and hence rental yields rise, investors are attracted back into the market, further putting pressure on price growth. What is the vacancy rate in your target area? Council's attitude to development. Council's attitude to development in a location can significantly impact on multiple levels. Clearly, if your strategy requires council approval, then being in a location where the council is pro-development and supportive of the process can make all the difference. The time frame for approval can be quicker, the potential cost can be less. Clarity in the process and hence ease of approval can significantly reduce stress and uncertainty, all of which are important factors. Alternatively, if you are not actively developing yourself, the council attitude will still impact on you by dictating the ease with which others may develop around you and hence the potential competition you may face. A good test of this is to monitor how many development applications have been lodged with your target council in the last 12 months and how many were actually approved and how long it took to get those approvals. Simply backtracking a similar council application to what you are looking to do and typing in the address of that development with a .pdf at the end will bring up all the correspondence on the property and you will quickly see any objections, requests for more information, restrictions and general BS that can delay or otherwise a project. This usually gives you a pretty fair gauge on the attitude of the council. After doing the above analysis and speaking to local town planners, what is the general attitude of your target council? Specific locations. Now that we have reviewed the various regions and factors at play in a location, we now need to align our personal circumstances with the selection of specific locations. Here we need to combine our risk profile with our capacity or not to travel, with our desired population size, available equity, and hence price point. Starting from where you live, draw concentric circles outwards until your desired factors align. If you are only capable of travelling a 1 hour distance, then mark that on the map and work outwards to that point. Look at all the locations within that distance and confirm if they meet your criteria. The idea here is to shortlist, say, 5 potential locations and then, following further more detailed research, reduce that down to 3 key locations. These may be 3 separate towns or 3 different suburbs within the one town. This final selection process needs to account for infrastructure activity in the area, supply and demand, and the other influencing characteristics we have discussed above. We will go into much more depth on finding a deal in a later module, but for now we just want to hone in on 3 potential target locations. Obviously, if you can fulfill your price point, risk profile, and population size requirements in a suburb closer to where you live, you will start with that location. If, however, you need to look beyond, then that is a process you take. Now we are ready to review the various property strategies that we could undertake, depending on your personal circumstances. Strategies. By now you already understand that there are income strategies and manufactured growth strategies, so we will deal with each individually. The purpose of this section is to review the strategies from the perspective of choosing the right ones that fit your location criteria and your personal circumstances. In a later module, we will deal with the step-by-step processes that are involved in carrying out each strategy. Also, before we begin, remember that there is more information on each strategy in your Ultimate Home Study course, plus in the recorded webinars on the Ultimate website. Income strategies. Income strategies are many and varied, but can be separated into 2 categories, direct cash cows and indirect cash cows, and these can be residential or commercial. Cash cows. Cash cow strategies are those where your income exceeds the expenses of the property, including interest on 100% of the purchase price, plus any costs associated with the purchase. Depending on what you are purchasing, the property can either be a direct cash cow or an indirect cash cow. Basically, the difference is that a direct cash cow is positive from the day you buy it, whereas an indirect cash cow is a property that you have to do something to in order to turn it into a positive cash flow. Let's have a look at some of the more common residential cash cow strategies and then commercial strategies. Executive leasing. This is the strategy where you rent the property to executive level people or companies and they pay a premium for the fact that it is fully furnished and can be rented on a shorter term basis. This strategy is typically suited to more metro, highly populated areas, and the location of the property is critical. Assuming a property manager is utilised, it can be a good strategy if you have limited time available, and it can be done across a range of budgets, from small inner-city apartments to luxury waterfront homes. It also doesn't need to be in close proximity to where you live. The risk profile is also relatively low, as long as you always have the option to rent it at standard market rent and at least cover the holding costs. Short-stay accommodation, for example, Airbnb. This is where you rent a property, typically to a traveller on a short-term basis, and the room on offer, or the entire house, is completely fitted out for them to move straight into, a bit like a motel, but instead in a private residence. Clearly, there needs to be a reason why people would want to come and stay in the property, and so the location is very important. It should be in a desirable destination, such as inner city, beachside, etc. This is definitely a more hands-on strategy, as you typically manage it yourself, and welcome the guests and arrange the cleaning on their departure. Hence, it's probably going to be close to where you live, or in fact, be your PPR. From a risk perspective, it is relatively low. Boarding house and student accommodation. These rent-by-room style accommodation types can be done in almost all locations, recognising that there is a need for affordable accommodation in most areas. Obviously, if it's student accommodation that you are offering, this needs to be in close proximity to an education facility, university, TAFE, college, etc. Being close to public transport, shops and facilities also tends to be important. From a time input and management perspective, these are definitely not set and forget strategies. They require ongoing input and are more aligned to running a business. Hence, they are also more likely to be located within a relatively easy commute, say an hour or so from where you live, particularly if you're the hands-on manager. Price points clearly differ depending on the size, location, and quality of the accommodation, with this type of property often being purpose-built or purpose-configured. The risk profile is reduced if you can easily convert it back to a standard dwelling. Granny flat or dual occupancy. This is where you can convert existing dwellings or parts of dwellings into granny flats or dual occupancy, or alternatively, construct them from scratch with the intention of creating multiple income stream properties. These can be done in any location, at any price point, are relatively low risk, and can be done with lower equity depending on the cost of the deal. Furnishing a property. Turning an unfurnished property into a fully furnished one and therefore renting it at a much higher rate clearly has the potential to increase its income earning capacity. Plus, there is the added benefit of the tax deductibility of the furniture. While there may be a bit of work to source and install the furniture, this strategy has a low ongoing time and management input. And of course, for a fee, you can have someone do all the work for you. Location-wise, this strategy can work in any location where there is a demand for fully furnished accommodation, hence it doesn't have to be in close proximity to where you live. Also, the price point is more varied and can be done on a studio unit or a 5-bedroom house. There are no limitations, and from a risk perspective, it is very low, as you can always remove the furniture and rent unfurnished if required. Installing signage. This strategy can be done on both residential and commercial property, and by renting out the signage, it becomes an extra income stream. Obviously, this is a strategy that can be done at a distance, can be relatively low cost, has a low time input, and is relatively low risk. You just need to have a demand for signage and a capacity to have it council approved depending on the regulations in your area. Storage sheds. This is a commercial multiple income stream cash cow strategy. The mere fact that it is a commercial property means that the lending requirements are different from residential, and the amount of cash required upfront is higher, for example, 40%. Storage sheds are not location specific, and they can be successful in most areas, although significant research is required in your due diligence. Obviously, the smaller the town and the lower the population, the less demand for storage, and the more land available, potentially the less need for storage. You have the option to self-manage or have it professionally managed, and so your time input and proximity requirements can vary. Even if you have the sheds under management though, this is definitely a business and the buck stops with you if there are issues, so you still have to manage your manager. This is not a set and forget strategy. The risk profile of storage sheds is higher because there are less usages for the site in its current form other than storage. Plus there is the potential for a competitor to move into the area which could adversely affect your business. Storage sheds typically follow the residential cycle, and the more affluent the residential area, the higher their capacity to pay for storage, and the more successful the business is likely to be, assuming it is well managed. Strip shops. Strip shops is a term given to shops that are typically in a row along a street and may be freestanding or under the same building roofline. Individual or multiple shops may be owned by the same owner, and there is often the potential to split a lettable area into additional tenancies, hence creating multiple income streams. This is in contrast to shopping centres and shopping complexes that tend to be owned by the one owner and the shops are individually leased. Clearly, the purchase and conversion of strip shops is a commercial venture. Hence, the lending requirements reflect this and a larger amount of equity is required. They can be purchased at varying price points depending on the location, size, quality of the building and the characteristics of the existing tenancies in place. Being commercial, there is a higher risk profile for various reasons. For example, if your tenant moves out, you need to source another commercial tenant. Factors affecting the economy of the town also become influential, and detailed due diligence is required. You need to ensure that your location remains relevant in the area over the long term, or at least over the period you intend to own it. If the town centre relocates owing to the opening of a shiny new shopping complex, and the strip shop area becomes less visited, and hence a less desirable location to operate a business, then obviously this will impact on your capacity to attract a quality tenant. Hostel, backpacker, motel, and caravan parks. The common traits among hostels, backpackers, motels, and caravan parks is that they are rented to multiple people, hence are multiple income stream properties. the duration of stay may differ between them, and the characteristics of the tenants may vary, but they are all commercial in nature, have a business component, and hence are not purely a property play. Operating a business definitely has a higher management and time input requirement, even if you are managing the manager, because once again, the buck stops with you, and if the manager is not performing, you need to be prepared to step in. Proximity to where you live, therefore, becomes relevant, as does your capacity to finance a commercial venture. Debt reduction using manufactured growth strategies. A cash cow property can also be created by reducing the level of debt on the property by paying down the loan amount and therefore reducing the interest payable. Given that interest is typically the largest holding cost on a property, it stands to reason that if you can significantly reduce your interest bill by lowering your debt, you in turn increase the cash flow. In addition to using cash savings to pay down debt, the other major strategy is to reinvest the profit created from a manufactured growth or chunk deal strategy. These may be separate deals, one being a manufactured growth deal that you sell and the other being a whole property that you pay down the debt on. Alternatively, these two strategies may be employed in the one deal, and for example, you may sell a portion of the deal, for example, 2 units, and then use the profits to pay down the debt on the remaining unit or units you intend to hold. Manufactured growth strategies. Manufactured growth strategies are those where you actively do something to the property to increase its value. This might include a renovation, subdivision, adding additional dwellings, or strata titling. It may include just getting the approvals, or it might include going ahead with the complete strategy and building the additional units or subdividing the land. The increased value may be in the form of increased equity if you continue to hold the property, or it may be profit created from selling the property, or a combination of the two. Let's have a look at some of the more common manufactured growth strategies from the perspective of location and your personal characteristics. Remember that these strategies are equally applicable on residential, commercial, and industrial property. Growth strategies. Renovation. Renovating a property has the potential to not only increase its market value, but also its rental rate, income, and therefore cash flow. It tends to be a more hands-on strategy, even if you are managing the tradies and not on the tools yourself. Therefore, your time availability is important, as is the distance you are prepared to travel. Clearly, if you have never done a renovation before, it's probably preferable that your first project is a relatively close proximity to where you live. That's not to say that it can't be done from a distance. It is just that this requires more coordination. From a location perspective, renovations can be done in any area. However, quality research needs to be done to ensure that you are getting leverage on your time, money, and effort, and this is certainly not the case with every property that needs renovation. Finally, risk is relatively low as long as you do not overcapitalize on the renovation process. Subdivision. The process of subdividing land into smaller lots requires an approval component to obtain council approval and final titling, and it includes an actual on-site works component which may involve creating a driveway, installing services, fencing, and/or groundworks. This strategy is one that can be done from a distance if necessary, as the approval process is all done on paper. Similarly, it can be done with a lower time input and can be done in most locations, although you need to be aware that in more regional areas where the land sizes are larger, the subdivided land size needs to be sympathetic to this, and smaller lots that may suit urban areas may not suit regional areas. The risk profile is relatively low, assuming it's not a 30-lot subdivision, and the risk is further reduced if you are able to maintain the existing dwelling on the site because of its intrinsic value. Development approval, or DA, and building approval, BA, and construction. Getting a development approval, building approval, and undertaking construction again requires a component of approvals through council, building certifier, and titles department, and also a construction component, whether it's a dwelling, commercial building, or the like. The time to complete the deal is longer than other strategies and could be anywhere from 4 months for a house to 12 months plus for a multi-unit development. The money requirement is also higher, as you need equity to purchase the property, plus equity to do the construction, and obviously, the higher the construction cost, the more equity required. Distance is less critical. However, during the construction phase, you will need to at least visit the site on several occasions. The risk profile of this strategy is significantly increased with the more dwellings you are constructing, the higher the project cost, and the more reliant you are on having to sell the end product. Strata titling. Strata titling of an existing dwelling involves confirming council approval of the structure, ensuring building code requirements are met, such as fire separation, and then finally creating the separate titles. Given that the building already exists, the strategy of strata titling can be a relatively quick process, tends to require less money depending on the remedial works required, and can be done in any location. It is also a strategy that can be done at a distance, although the site works require a level of supervision. 3+3=21 rule. We have now reviewed the various income and manufactured growth strategies and have considered the different location options based on how they fit in with your personal characteristics, read time, money, risk profile, experience, etc. Let's now look at how the process of simply selecting three strategies and three different locations actually equates to 21 different combinations of opportunities. This is called the 3+3=21 rule. Let's look at an example so that you understand the maths. Let's assume your three chosen strategies are A, renovation, B, strata titling, and C, adding an additional dwelling, and let's assume the three chosen locations may be three different suburbs or three different towns, for example, town 1, 2, and 3. Detailed in the table are the 21 different combinations of strategies and locations. Now you can see that by doing the individual strategy at each location and then combining strategies, for example, renovation plus strata titling in location 1, you in fact have 21 different combinations to work with. The idea here is to become an expert in your three chosen locations and in your three chosen strategies. By focusing your efforts of research and due diligence on these six aspects, hopefully, now you can see that you don't need to be an expert at every strategy. What you want to avoid is jumping between many different locations and considering all types of strategies, because this just results in a lack of clarity, a lack of focus, and potentially spinning your wheels and not getting the traction you require. Take on board this process, list out your personal characteristics, and really think about them from a realistic perspective. How far are you really prepared to travel? How much can you afford? What are your personal talents? Now review the strategies and how they fit in with your profile and shortlist three. Now review your locations of interest, accounting for your personal characteristics and the factors affecting that location in order to shortlist three. Now combining those three strategies in the three locations will set you on the clear path of focused research and deal creation.